mistake, and I was told that they would be putting back some of them back on this one. So these are the full links we have. So you can look up these things later. So all this material will be posted online. So you will have all this information even if we skip through them quickly. So let me talk about the...
Yeah. I was actually just looking, during the break, I was looking on the Flash Memory website for posts of some of the papers that I've listened to. And I found the postings for 2015, but I couldn't find any of them for 2016. So does anybody know that if there's a special trick to finding them?
They're probably posted after.
Usually done
after. We will actually post this right after the presentations are done.
Yeah, but that's my point, is I couldn't find anything.
No, they are there actually. So let's cover this later because we're running out of time here. Okay, all right. So the agenda would be platform firmware. I call it as a platform firmware because I hate to call it as a BIOS. But I'm adding BIOS there because most of the folks, you know, doesn't know what it is basically. So it's, I would call it as a platform firmware because it covers everything. And then device drivers, what type of the device drivers we have. We have the reference drivers, we have the OEM specific custom drivers that are part of the systems that you buy. And then you have the vendor specific drivers that come as part of the option RAM. And I'll talk about how to get most of the, most from the NVMe drivers. So UEFI ecosystem typically consists of the OEMs. Of course, they are the ones that are selling the hardware. So you have the server systems, you have the client systems, you have your iPhones, iPads. UEFI is everywhere, basically. It replaced the BIOS a while ago. It has industry-wide adaptation. And UEFI NVMe drivers are very stable. So Intel engineers did an excellent job in writing the original reference code for the UEFI. And then I did modify the UEFI driver, and basically I worked with all the OEMs and BIOS vendors and OS vendors to, not exactly OS vendors, but OEMs and BIOS vendors to have those bugs fixed. So, they are available on the NVMe Express website. So this is the UEFI website is here, and then, so this is how the UEFI driver comes into picture. You see the pre-verifier. So you have the, when you power on the system, right, any system, so you do the security check, the security phase, then you have the CPU, chipset and memory initialization, you have the board initialization. Then comes the next, after the pre-EFI installation, you have the driver execution environment, that's where the drivers are loaded. So pretty much your BIOS is done and all your device recognition, and then based on what type of device it is, the drivers are loaded by the BIOS. That's when the UEFI driver comes into picture. When you have NVMe SSD or NVMe AIC card or M.2 card, whatever it is, the BIOS knows that's a NVMe drive and it loads the driver which is part of the platform firmware. Or if your vendor gives the option RAM, it will be loaded from the option RAM. Then once it is loaded, then you have the block IO protocol is installed on the drive, then you have the boot path is recognized, then bootloader is loaded, and then operating system loads. So for UEFI pretty much covers everything from power on till you shut down and end of life, basically. It's not just the only BIOS. That's why I don't like to call it as a BIOS there. So, as I said, I work with the OEMs, almost all the OEMs in having the UEFI generic support for all the NVMe devices. It's just not Intel or Samsung. Everybody's NVMe drive should be supported. I worked with them very closely and made sure that UEFI drives work. Then now most of the systems, they automatically recognize the NVMe drives and you can boot from them, just like a SATA drive. And there are reference drivers, which are useful for debugging. Especially if you want to bring up an NVMe SSD, you can enable the debug in the BIOS, you can enable the debug in your driver source code. You can practically see what's happening at both at the system firmware level and the NVMe level. So that's where the reference drivers come into picture. They're very useful. I did most of my debugging at the UEFI level, and we did find so many issues without the operating system present. And then IHV drivers, the your vendors, drive vendors give you the drives, custom drives to support the legacy systems that does not have UEFI. So, are the systems with the half-baked UEFI? Most of the systems, with some BIOS vendors chose not to adopt the latest UEFI. So they kind of, you know, still some of the machines, they still go with the older version of the UEFI. So, for those, the option of based UEFI drivers are useful. So, there are standard disk tools available under UEFI. UEFI shell is mostly like a operating system. You can do several things. Except for the graphical user environment, you can do practically everything under UEFI shell. And it's very useful for bringing up the hardware, any hardware, not just NVMe. So these are the protocols. You can firmware update and driver health and all these things, they are useful. HII is the one that, when you go to the BIOS setup, you see the menu screens, right? So those are the HII screens, basically, human interface infrastructure kind of thing. So in summary, UEFI provides an excellent environment for your debug, and especially when you're bringing up your hardware, UEFI drivers are very useful for that purpose. Because when you cannot boot operating system, when you are not there at to boot an operating system. So if you search my name on Google, you will find the presentations on the UEFI and NVMe drivers. The past presentations have a lot of details on, you know, what to do, all the commands and all the things are available on Google. So if you have any feedback, let me know. This is my email address. So we have a Windows reference driver available. It's a community driver, but I'm not going to cover this because of lack of time. So next would be Mr. Leibowitz. Mr. Pruitt is a principal program manager with 25 years of experience in the storage industry, ranging from magneto-optical to spinning rust to flash. He's currently working for the Windows and Devices group at Microsoft, where he is responsible for many of the components in the storage stack, including file systems, filter manager, containers, store port, and Microsoft's inbox, minibox, miniport drivers. He is responsible for storage devices ranging from SD and eMMC in mobile to NVMe in the enterprise and data centers. He is also the Microsoft representative for the to the NVMe board. So I would like to welcome Mr. Pruitt.
Thank you. So, kind of switching up here, now I'll talk about the Microsoft inbox driver that we have across many versions of Windows. And so, originally, we introduced our inbox NVMe driver, storenvme.sys, in Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2. And it was aligned with the 1.0c spec. Because we saw such a great opportunity with NVMe, we actually at that point decided to backport it to Windows 7 and Server 28 R2. So you can see that these are right now that any of the supported operating systems from Microsoft have an inbox driver. So it kind of just works, so to speak. And it is a store port mini port, so it's responsible down at the bottom of the storage stack for doing the translation, because the Microsoft storage stack is a SCSI stack. It is responsible for doing the translation from SCSI to NVMe. And as such, it follows the SCSI to NVMe translation specification. So just a quick look at what does the storage stack kind of look like. You can think of all the way from the application up in user space, where we're talking about it just reads bytes and writes bytes to file handles. We talk about the file system, then doing the translation from bytes file to translate file offsets to bytes, and then of course down through the volume manager, translating finally into the storage stack where we actually have a SCSI command, a CDB, and then finally all the way down into the mini port where we translate it back again out into the NVMe-ness and across the to the device. So, with that, the inbox driver is actually fairly performant. We get, if you can see from this graph, So we talk about if we have one device, two device, three device, four device, you can see the IOPS scaling that happens along. Well, we do have some problems if we have an application that is not NUMA aware, but if the application is NUMA aware, the storage stack is NUMA aware, and we get a very pretty good linear scaling between 1, 2, 3, and 4 devices. So this was done on an Intel Brickland system with 60 cores, and you can see how, as we go, the scaling of this average CPU utilization is pretty linear, the megabytes per second is linear, the IOPS is linear, and the average latency is pretty flat. So pretty good scaling overall. On another vector, we have one of our primary, primary motivations in any of the drivers that we do is reliability. And so with that, our inbox driver is a highly reliable driver. From our telemetry, we see that its crash rate, unique machine crash rate, is on the order of less than 0.5%. It's about 3 times better than, vendor A, and a lot better than vendor B. So there are a variety of drivers out there with varying quality, and so that is something that needs to be taken into account when you're testing your systems and you're testing your devices.
What does crash rate mean, percentage per year, per week?
For number of unique machines we see crashing out there, what is their crash reason? Right? And so the crash reason being the store NVMe driver, it's a very low reason percentage wise.
Okay.
Good question. Also, the driver is now very power efficient. People are wanting to use these things in all kinds of devices, not just enterprise. So we have very good battery life for laptops or other mobile devices. We have 2 sets. We have the operational power states, where the device can handle I/O, but it's been throttled, maps to what we call logical performance states, or P states, if you're familiar with those within the Windows architecture. So the idea here is that if a device needs to be used, but we can't use it at its full performance envelope because of, thermal issues within the case, we can set it into a lower P state and still get decent performance out of it, but it stays cooler and doesn't burn somebody's knee or something like that. And then also we have very aggressive non-operational power states, which map to kind of the logical, states, what we call F states. So this will be things like connected standby type states, either with user present or user absent. So if you're familiar with the old S3, S4, this maps to a kind of a new S3 where the power is very low, but the resume time is also very low. So if the user then actually uses the storage, it comes back very quickly. And transitions to these states are determined by the overall power state. So it's basically the whole holistic map of, is the user using the device actively, or are they, the screen's off, but they're listening to music, or the thing has gone into connected standby, and the user is not present at the device anymore. And this can be tuned or disabled, depending on what you're trying to do with the device via the inbox power config tool. So we have seen some OEMs that want to play with different numbers with this, and so they will take power config and tune the system to their specific device and how they put their system together. So, some of the possible future directions that we're looking at for the driver. Obviously, we're very interested in the streaming proposal. We've been actively working with Samsung and others on that. Write Protect and RPMB for more mobile applications. Namespace management and virtualization. So none of this is, of course, on a record yet. I also have to say that because the lawyers make me. But we would like to hear from people out there. What do they want? What are the use cases that we're not supporting today that they want to see? So kind of the call to action. We'd love to try it out. See if you have issues. Let us know what they are. Give us feedback. And there's my contact info if there's anything you'd like to talk about. And with that, I have a whole bunch of stuff in kind of appendix slides that you can go through when you have a chance. Take a look at that. I'm going to say that I wasn't supposed to display it because he'd kill me if I did. So, thank you.
Thank you, Lee. So our next presenter is Parag Maharana. He's a storage architect in Flash Products Division at Seagate. Parag has 22 years of experience in product development and architecture of storage solutions. His expertise is in the NVMe-based products and emerging technologies. So he was a product development and architect at various companies like LSI, AMI and Tata Elxsi. He has a master's degree in computer science and engineering from Jadavpur University, and he has 14 approved patents. So I would welcome Parag.
Thank you. So I'm very excited to present the Linux Fabric Driver, because this is done by so many people and so many companies, and they have dedicated time. The time the Fabric Driver is released and the spec release and the Fabric Driver open source, is there is a time gap is very little. But still, there are a lot of people did a lot of work in the community and dedicated time and to make this happen. So current Linux Fabric Drivers are based on the spec, Fabric Spec 1.0 and the Core Spec 1.21. So we are planning to implement everything, all the mandatory features of the Fabric Driver. And we took the NVMe driver and re-architect to make it sure that it follows the Fabric models. There is a PCI transport and other Fabric transport and future transport, all the things can work with the same driver. So we re-architect and use almost 90% of the existing code and create a function template, what we call as the, you can have different functionality within a function. So for example, if you take the PCI fabric, PCI attached SSD, and you do a read register, that doesn't mean anything in the fabric. So there have to be a template method to make it happen. So that's what I try to explain here. And the fabric driver is now, the whole NVMe Linux driver is divided into two sections. One is called host driver, other one is called fabric driver. So each of them has a different components. So there is a core component which is derived from the NVMe driver that apply to both the host driver and the target driver. Their commonality been used, reused. And we are planning to release this fabric driver with the Linux kernel 4.8.
Question.
Yeah.
Why the host driver including the PCIe port?
Yeah, because the same driver runs on the local. Okay. Okay. So why the PCIe driver, the host driver required for the PCIe?
Yeah, including the PCIe.
Yes, because the same PCIe driver works for the fabric as well as the PCI.
Okay. Okay. So that's why you can only
command over. Yeah, host driver is meant to the local drive access. Okay. So that drive can be coming from the externally from the any of the fabric, but it gives you access to the fields of the local SSD. So what is the driver methodology being used? So, initial the host and target driver are developed with the multiple NVMe member companies, and as I mentioned that there is a dedicated people, they put a lot of time to make this happen, and all the NVMe, initially it was part of the private repository with the exclusive NDA, but slowly, slowly once the code is matured, then we started releasing the, with the infrared. Basically. Then we have the host driver, source code, and everything is moved to the infrared repository, and multiple member activity working on those patches, and it is already there. I have a reference at the back of the thing where you can download the code. And what are the things being implemented for the current fabric driver? It has the host driver has the fabric transport as a connection and disconnection for the multiple controllers. Means the this is something new for the host driver, because now we are talking to a fabric oriented drive, so those things have to be connected. It is not locally available through the PCI enumeration, so that have to be there. Then the transport of the NVMe command and data generated by the NVMe core, that core is used by both the target and fabric drivers, and it also required a discovery process that required to find out where the remote drives are available. And plus, we have two new features for the multipath and the keep alive. This is something like a watchdog timer in hardware. Is a software-based mechanism where you can keep on checking whether your drive is alive or its connection is broken or something like that. And back to the NVMe target driver, the mandatory NVMe, all the features of mandatory features of the NVMe and fabric command been implemented. And we are supporting multi-host, subsystem control, namespace, all the things we are supporting. And discovery also is there in the target size, and the target configuration information, everything is also included. So coming back to the how the fabric driver differentiate from the regular driver. So the I have included a slide at the backup section, maybe you can see later. But the basically the when the NVMe PCI drivers comes, it allocates the submission queue and completion queue in the host memory. But when you come to the fabric model, the submission queue is not in the PCI memory of the initiator. It is in the target side. So the command packet have to be built and send RDMA send to the other side. So other side, the target receives as a RDMA receive, and it actually puts into the submission queue of the SSD. And from the target side, then it, based on the read request or write request, it can do a RDMA read or RDMA write to the host buffers. Then finally, when the command is completed, it will put the 16-byte completion to the in host queue, and they will send you RDMA send. So this is not the same mechanism what used to be the PCI doorbell mechanism. There is no doorbell, no interrupt in this one. So the host driver's implementation is depend on to generate interrupt by the RDM event or anything that is, if there is a proprietary information. And this is the core of the model of the host driver and the target driver. And the core is consist of the NVMe commands and the NVMe admin commands and IO commands and the NVMe and fabric common data structures. That is shared between the both PCI and fabric driver. So the it is also, so those drivers are previously, all these drivers are so the all these drivers are part of the NVMe driver. Now they've been restructured and formed individually modules, and those modules been clearly defined in the new Linux driver source structures. And this is a common driver. You can load a driver and it will say the NVMe core. This is the core driver, and this is the PCI driver, and this is the fabric driver. So then we come back to the overall architecture of the NVMe host driver. So it depends on the this implemented the block MQ interface, and you can have the same NUMA based or processor based architecture, queue based mechanism, and you can do everything the way you used to a local SSD versus a fabric based SSD. If the mechanism is from block layer and above, everything looks similar. There is no difference, but below this, it goes to the PCI transport or the RDMA transport. That's where the differentiation comes from the outside, from application point of view. You just need to know that there is a SSD available, local or remote. Next, this is the target driver architecture, where you can implement the IOs are coming to the target and target process, and there is a Linux config.fs utility integrated to the configuration of the target driver that can be used, and the RDMA fabric. Also, the common driver, they implemented a loopback driver just to validate if you don't have a fabric driver available or device available, you can still test with the loopback driver. So what are the next step Linux driver is doing? Now the we are almost done with the implementation of the all the mandatory features of the Linux fabric driver, and we are trying to do the fiber channel driver that will be planned to do on the kernel 4.9 plus we are planning to do the authentication feature and controller memory buffer and automated post multipath and different type of log pages supports we wanted to bring into the driver. So this will be done post a 4.8 release, but we are trying to stabilize the driver, and we are working on the people to come back and say that is there any issue or anything like that. We are requesting people to download the driver and try out. If you think something is missing or something required enhancement or any feature things, please let us know and we will happy to accommodate you. And here is some links. You can download the specification and you can download the fabric driver resources, and plus this GitHub is already public from the June. You can download the driver, and if you have any question or anything, you can send email to this link. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Parag. So our next speaker would be Jim Harris from Intel. He's a storage software architect in Intel's data center group with more than 15 years of experience in a variety of storage-related projects. Jim's primary focus is the Storage Performance Development Kit. It's a set of optimized fold mode user space software, building blocks for scalable and efficient storage applications based around NVMe and next generation non-volatile media. Jim is also a FreeBSD source committer and the original author and maintainer of the NVMe support in FreeBSD. So I would like to welcome Jim.
Thanks, Subham. So I'm first going to talk about the Storage Performance Development Kit. This is a little bit different than what most of the talks you've heard so far today. This is really geared towards storage appliances and applications which are dedicated for storage. Cases where you're going to take an NVMe device, it's going to be single purpose. And in a lot of these cases, what we've seen on the network side for a long time, and now with storage as well, is there's a lot of cases where these applications and appliances will avoid a lot of the overhead you might get in general purpose operating systems and actually do the work in user space and fold mode to get much better efficiency. And I'll go through some performance data that shows that in some more detail. This does leverage the Data Plane Development Kit. This is another open source project that is used very widely in the networking space for data packet processing, network packet processing. This is really designed, currently we see huge efficiencies on NAND, but it's especially designed for some of the next generation NVMe media like 3D XPoint. It is BSD licensed, so you can use it as reference code, porting, etc., without any sort of license restrictions. And you can get access to it via GitHub or our project website, spdk.io. So this just shows the building blocks that we've released so far as part of SPDK. I'm just going to talk about this NVMe SSD driver down here, but this is really something that we're designing as a framework for building more sophisticated target applications and user space to be able to take advantage of some of these next generation media latencies. So the NVMe driver features, it is 1.2 spec compliant. It runs in an asynchronous pulled mode operation. Again, I'll go into some more details on why this is important. We were able to eliminate a lot of the software overhead that you get with typical interrupt-driven operation. There's a number of optional features that are implemented to the driver. For example, weighted round robin, controller memory buffer, end-to-end data protection, reservations for dual port operation, and also scatter gather list. So this just goes talks a little bit about the driver throughput scalability. Where's our magic laser pointer here? Let's see here. Wrong way. Okay, so, you know, we've talked a lot about how these NVMe Express SSDs, they can get a 500,000 IOs per second. And, you know, now that we see that, you know, we're going to start seeing systems that are going to have multiple SSDs in one platform, you may have appliances that have even more than that. Typically, we see with the Linux kernel driver that the scales pretty well. You can get about a 500,000 IOs per second per core. But what we've done on with this chart here is we've actually restricted operation just using a single Intel Xeon core and seeing how far can we ramp this. So with the Linux kernel, we're sort of maxed out here around 500,000 IOs per second. But with the SPDK driver, because we're eliminating the interrupt overhead, eliminating a lot of the other more generic block level features that you would get in a general purpose driver operating system, we can scale this where we can max out 8 Intel P3700 SSDs with a single core. So again, this isn't real. We're not pushing this as like this replaces the Linux kernel NVMe driver or the Linux kernel NVMe driver is bad. This is just really a solution for those cases where you do have a dedicated storage appliance or application. So next, I'm going to touch on FreeBSD. For those that aren't familiar with FreeBSD, it is a rather it's actually rather well used with a lot of appliance vendors. Netflix actually uses FreeBSD on a lot of their cache appliances. Netflix is a pretty big contributor to the FreeBSD project. So just wanted to touch briefly on the FreeBSD drivers. Uma had mentioned in the past that we hadn't had this talk here, so I just wanted to touch a little bit about that this year. So in FreeBSD, you have, it's a full distribution. It's not like Linux where you have the Linux kernel and then you have, you know, different distributions. FreeBSD is a whole project. And so as part of that, we have the drivers here. We have the core NVMe driver, which traditionally up until just the last few months is exposed through the generic Xeon block layer. Netflix has recently added support to Surface NVMe through CAM, which makes it sort of on par with the SCSI and ATA functionality that's in FreeBSD today. And then it also provides this NVMe control utility similar to like NVMe CLI on Linux to do some of those more management type operations. So a little bit of overview. Support was added to FreeBSD in 2012. Currently it's 1.0e spec compliant. The primary contributors are Intel. Netflix is also a big contributor on this. And then I briefly went through these modules already here. So in summary, you know, especially on the SPDK point, if that's something that's of interest to you, please download the source code. We have some example apps and Hello World applications. You know, definitely kick the tires on that and provide feedback. And same thing for FreeBSD. If this is something that's of interest to you, please take a look and provide details on what you'd like to see more of. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. So our next presenter would be Sudhanshu Sarjain. So Sarjain leads vSphere product management to drive network and storage interconnection solutions at VMware. He is also responsible for vSphere's virtual devices and virtual platform. So prior to VMware, he was a director of product management at Alcatel Lucent, where he was leading the distributed data center fabric solution to telco space. So I would like to welcome Serge.
Thanks, Umar. we are saving the best for the last, huh? Great. Okay, so from VMware perspective, I think Flash and NVMe is a big focus area. There are many use cases is inside the VMware platform where we are trying to leverage different Flash technology, different NVMe and VM even. We are going into that direction. So we are making a lot of investment in that area. But before we go into that area, I think let me give you a little bit glimpse of where what the thought process was inside the VMware to march or towards that journey where then we are getting newer and newer technologies and as well as both on the networking side and the storage side, and also VMware's ambition to virtualize complete data center infrastructure itself. So we started working with many of the IO vendors tirelessly for the last couple of years, and we have been working with them, and thanks to them we have introduced our technology for the new sets of driver what we want to introduce. So what we had before was sort of a legacy architecture depending on the VMware Linux infrastructure, which has been quite popular for the last 10 years or so. But we introduced totally a brand new set of APIs in the our kernel itself, and that's where we start building our infrastructure. So last couple of years we have invested quite extensively in this area, and that's where we are trying to introduce NVMe, RDMA, and NVMe over Fabric, and a lot of newer set of technology, 100 gigs and all that stuff coming up, all the good stuff is coming up in this area. So that's where our focus is. And moving forward, we want to make sure that most of the new features are coming up in this architecture itself. And from that point of view, basically this is what the core architecture is from the vSphere point of view. So if you see, we have an NVMe driver which been out there for about one release now. We are working to extend that further into the, going towards NVMe 1.2. We are also working in the Fabric space quite closely with many of the ecosystem partners, and we'll continue to invest in that area. Also, we are introducing RDMA as part of this architecture. Also, we are doing it something, I will say, maybe the industry's first, a virtualized NVMe device. So it's a complete virtualized NVMe device. Currently, it's a spec to 1.0e spec of NVMe. So any NVMe driver you have from standard Windows or Linux should be able to work on top of it. And we have done some initial studies on the performance, and it's a lot more performant than what you get from PBSCSI driver or even LSI driver. So that's the area where we want to continue investing. Today, our stack today is SCSI stack. What we want to get eventually is get end-to-end NVMe stack, and that's another area of focus where we're investing in it as well. So that's the area where we are continuing to invest, and we are trying to bring this data stores, LANs on across the board, multiple abstraction technology, what we support, whether it's the virtual SAN, which VMFS, or virtual volume, they will all be supporting NVMe-based data stores as well as NVMe over Fabric data stores. So as far as the journey goes, basically if you look at it, we started in 5.5. We introduced an async driver, it was not inbox. We enhanced that and introduced the first inbox driver in 6.0. It was basically pegged to about 1.0e, and we are trying to enhance that further in the coming release and trying to introduce many new features. And we are looking for inputs and feedback from the community. What do you like to see it? I know that multiple queues, streams, namespaces, everything is which is up for discussion here, and we are working on it. Same on the Fabric side. There are many talks about what all we need to do in any Fabric side. We are trying to work with our RDMA community as well as in the fiber channel community to bring NVMe over Fabric in the multiple flavors going forward. At a very high level, these are the places where you can get more information. We have our driver. We are also open sourcing our driver. It's available on GitHub now. I think there should be some pointer. Yes, that's the pointer. What we want to do is we are making it under BSD license. So if you want to innovate as a partner community and trying to bring your own innovation back to the VMware, we are open for that. And actually you can bring it, your innovation, and make it your own exclusive. So we are making the open, the whole ecosystem open for the for your innovation to come and be part of VMware community and supported by VMware officially. So that's another powerful point what we are trying to invest in as well. So that's pretty much it from my point of view, and thank you.
Thank you, sirs. So we didn't expect that we'll have so much time. So we have a lot of time for questions and answers. Yes, Mr. Huntley.
Yes, slide 46, you said that you're using RDMA send and receive to update the submission queue. But well, why are you using untagged buffers instead of tagged buffers?
So any other questions?
Stack and the bottom we're translating back into NVMe, do we feel that we've left anything on the table?
A little bit.
Frankly, at this point, if
you looked at the
diagram I gave, at the point where we actually translate into SCSI at the disk layer,
to the point where we're actually
sending the command on the NVMe is about 5 microseconds of latency in the stack right now. We've done a lot to bring it down to a very small level.
So currently, with the devices in, 80 microseconds on a really good device, we're not so bad on the overhead.
Next generation from our friends here, if we go to single digit microsecond latencies on the NVMe device, then yes, we start to have a problem.
But that being said, my portion of the stack is the 5 microseconds, and then my colleagues in the file system have a much higher overhead than I do. So I'll make them go first.
I think just to add to it, basically, of course, you can integrate the NVMe inside the SCSI stack, and that's what everybody does initially. But there's a lot of value to use NVMe stack end to end, especially when we're looking at it from a virtualization perspective, and there's multiple stacks involved here, especially the one desktop is all the way to the drive. We want to make sure that we are able to take advantage of these stacks. And that's why one of the reasons we are trying to introduce the virtual device, so that in the guest operating system, you can run the NVMe stack to start with itself.
Okay.
Yeah, good question. So were there any SCSI commands that we didn't have a good translation mechanism for? And the answer is no, mostly because there's a small set of actual SCSI commands that we ever generate within Windows itself, on the order of, I believe, 18 commands, and they're all very well represented in the translation document.
Around 800,000 IOPS. Is that over 60 cores at 10 or 12% utilization?
Yeah, good question. Actually, frankly, I don't know on that one because I got that slide from a colleague. but I believe it was what we do is we query the device and we look at the number of cores and then we spread things around with NUMA in mind. So we do it within a NUMA group and put out on each core a submission and completion queue per core up to the number that the device supports.
So if you have that 5 microseconds,
yes, at some point, obviously, you know, the overhead gets to the point where we're, you know, you don't get any workload done. I haven't done all the calculations on that yet, and again, as I say, it's really more like in the file system and in the application layer where the most of that stuff gets, we waste a lot of time, so to speak. But yeah, someday we're going to probably have to change the IO modeling, but we're not quite there yet.
Okay, Mr. Carley.
Yes, could you, any of you, probably Lee, give some example use cases for multiple namespaces?
So asking about use cases for multiple namespaces. Frankly, I don't really have any.
Yeah, so people generally asking for the multiple namespaces, they want to do different things from the different namespaces. For example, they want to...
Mike, speak into the mic.
So basically, people are asking for a multiple namespace for different purpose. So someone want to run to the high IOPS and things like that, 4K block size. Someone want to just boot a legacy block by 12 block size. They may want to have two different namespaces. So this kind of thing, use cases are available today. And if there are different applications, they want to dedicate a namespace per application.
Another use case comes out from the virtualization perspective. When you have multiple guest operating systems and you want to manage it differently, have a different priority, that's the very thing.
Yeah, I think from our point of view as well, it's, namespaces really become necessary when you're doing virtualization and you've got SRIOB and you're giving chunks of the namespaces to a VM directly.
Yeah, that's the correct answer.
If you go to the 4.7 kernel, if you download the link view, it comes with everything. So if you do a kernel build, make menu config, then there is option for the host driver, target driver, and RDM target. You have to enable those and build the kernel, then you get everything. You don't need a separate driver.
For the SPDK NVMe over Fabric's target, it does require OFED since it is running in user space.
And on the VMware stack, if you are using RDMA, and this is coming out in DDK available now, that comes with OFED compliant APIs. So you will use compliance, any driver.
So, Gary, if you go to the whole stack, you get more technical.
Sorry?
So what I'm hearing is you don't need OFED stack.
In VMware, of course, you don't need it. It's compliant already.
Okay.
We don't yet support Fabrics. We're looking at that. So,
so any more questions? Please go ahead.
For the Windows and VMware stack, what is the support on metadata protection?
So, the protection information, so our story for that is what we call spaces and ReFS, where the metadata and data are protected via checksumming across different blocks from the file system level. And so it's more ubiquitous, and we don't really do a transport-based protection.
The question is around protection in terms of encryption.
Metadata.
Metadata. So basically we have data address encryption, and also we have metadata protection for the VMFS. And be
warm. Okay. Yeah, please go ahead.
One more for all three stacks. How about SGL support? Is that all the plan or is it supported in the
So for the SGL about require mandatory for the fabric driver, but if you are running with the standard NVMe, PCI based NVMe, you don't need to have it. It is all PRPs.
But yes, we support SGLs.
So most of the drivers have the SGL support. It's an optional feature in the PCIe, but it's a requirement for the fabrics. So does that answer your question? Yeah, please.
Not necessarily, no, no. Yeah, the target, it's as long as the target is both in the Linux, there is not required. So this PRP-based SSD can work as a target because the block layer itself issues the BIOS to the driver. It automatically converts to the PRP.
If you go to the shop floor, I think you'll see a lot of solution around that, and everybody is innovating in some way or other.
You don't get to ask questions.
I could have had him ask it for is hardware virtualization on any of your roadmaps or vision like SRIOV or similar types of direct virtualization?
So I can take it from VMware perspective. Basically, direct path we support across the board from multiple kind of devices.
I'm not sure if everybody heard the question.
Okay, so let me repeat the question in terms of hardware virtualization. What kind of hardware virtualization we support in the virtualized platforms? So in general, we support direct path, which is basically you can assign the device complete to a particular guest operating system. And that is a pretty much technology agnostic. So you can do it over NIC, you can do it for tape drive, storage, everything you can do that. But on SRV side, we do support SRV pass-through for NIC side and also for GPUs. We have not done much investment in the storage side yet. We see requirement of on and off from different vendors, but there's no strong use case for us to support it yet on the storage side. Mm-hmm. But it comes up in many discussion on the...
Yeah, I think we're closely working with Brian and Christoph in the committees to work on the virtualization specification. We are interested in it. Again, say no POR, no, again, lawyers make me say no POR, no POR. But we are interested, and we do see some as, again, use cases when some certain new technologies hit the NVMe space.
Yeah, and I certainly think with the current mechanisms to virtualize NVMe storage, since you don't have SRIOV support in the SSDs today, especially when you start getting to 3D crosspoint type latencies, I think that's where having that direct SRIOV support is going to be important, because that extra virtualization overhead is noticeable once you get to some of those kinds of latencies. So I think certainly from an SPDKA and FreeBSD perspective, and I'm sure Linux as well, once that supports in the SSDs, and I think the operating systems are all going to support it.
Okay, yeah, please.
Can each of you also comment on device and namespace identification? A study is always having a line of where you need to identify the namespace, all that had a straightforward. Do they have any open fabrics? They're also adding head to heads.
Yeah. So I'd just like to hear if you guys have to say how it's working today and what you're thinking of changing in the upcoming changes in the spec.
Yeah. So basically,
when you have a hard drive or the NVMe drive in the system, local system, always you go through the bus device function, right? So that enumeration, that uniqueness brings to the drive. But when you go to the outside world and they're bringing SAR in the same SSD to different servers or clients, then you need to have a unique way to identify a device. Just like in the SCSI, you have the VBD83 to identify drive. So similar, we come up with a solution called the NQM. So you can uniquely identify a controller and uniquely identify an in-space in the fabric. That is a requirement for the fabric, because otherwise you will not identify a device properly across the different nodes.
Okay. So any more questions? We have, I think, 1 minute. All right, thank you very much. Have a good day. So please collect your goodies.
And so I'm going to make sure there's that. Thank you. It was a very educational panel. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the